actually, I hate grade cricket.
Hello, welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we're talking Pakistani players of promise, who the big four bats are, climaxing to Babar Azam, and what makes us feel good. Ireland beat England in the third ODI after Tom Banton says the England team are the hardest sports team in the world to get into. Who gets the Boxing Day test, where the World Cups are being played, and Shane Warne's new cologne. Brendan Julian is on the show, Rob Key is on the show, and we'll finally answer the hashtag RCDC from last week about love in North Yorkshire. This is all thanks to Budgie Smuggler, BudgieSmugglerUK.com, and Pezza Manscaped, who get 20% off of your purchase using the code TDC at checkout. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Sam Perry. Pezzy lad, get it through the chest, some more sexual language from us early doors. How are you, Pez?
Yeah, going well, thank you. Nice intro.
Okay, well, yeah, it was all right. Mate, the main story of the week is obviously Shane Warne's new cologne.
Oh, yeah.
And I was reading through my Bible, GQ. Yeah.
Fuck, our DMs were popping off, weren't they?
Popping, man. They were popping. There were blue ticks everywhere. A couple of blue bombers. GQ headline, which reads this: Shane Warne's new fragrance is basically tailor-made for the post-game circuit. That's a headline on GQ.
Okay.
Shane Warne's new fragrance is basically tailor-made for the post-game circuit. So I want to know what the royalties are going to be, because that's obviously just Chop King cologne.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, we love the king, don't we? I mean, he's the white whale. He's the white whale of the show. So I'm loath, because he would be a listener, I'm loath to, you know, criticise this too much or suggest that there's any kind of confusion over who owns the circuit-based cologne. Yeah. It's just great to see Chop King cologne come to life. You know, this was an idea born. I remember where it was born. Mm-hmm. I was in England. I was emceeing a gig at North London Cricket Club that Murph Hughes was performing Hughes at yeah, as yeah, well. Yeah, and the yeah, three yeah. things I remember from that yeah. performance are a sophisticated UK woman accosting Murph Hughes to do more abuse sledging stories once he'd finished.
Right.
I also remember a player during the president's speech yelling out, "Spank me, daddy," while the president rebuked the club for not training and giving away their wickets and stuff like
right.
that. And overhearing someone say afterwards, like over a few pints, that they reeked of runs. And I thought, reeked of runs, that's funny.
And this is before Chop King.
This is where the idea was born, Chop King cologne, which has now obviously reached full actualization with the launch of Shane Warne's cologne at Chemist Warehouse. So I'm just happy that the whole thing has come full circle.
Okay.
And I'm happy for Warne. The woody and boldly intense fragrance exudes sophistication, sensuality, and warmth, and sumptuous ingredients that envelop the senses. That could be describing Warne's leg spin itself. Now, we should say all the proceeds from that go to supporting children with cancer. All proceeds.
Right.
So just adding that in there, it's a lovely little execution from Shane.
Sure.
But then we'll separate that and make connections with Chop King cologne.
Yeah, well, that's true, Pez. But also a quote from Warne on this in his article said, "I've had some good feedback from women. They seem to like this. People will notice you wearing it and they will comment on how wonderful you smell." So, you know,
he's the king. What is it about Warne? He's the king.
What is it about him?
Yeah.
Heaps.
Yes, there's a bit going on. Yeah.
Well, there is a bit going on, mate, because there's heaps to talk about on the show, a couple of great guests, a couple of wonderful commentators. Rob Key, I'm excited about.
Yes.
We've already had these interviews and they're good.
Yeah.
They're good fun. Anyway, but before we get into that.
Yes.
I don't know how to preface this, a little TGC announcement. We're just trying to tell these people about we're putting more out there.
Yeah, a little bit more out there now. You look, as everyone knows, we're living in a moment where you have to hustle a little bit. You have to make a few new avenues, make some changes. It's the COVID environment.
Right.
It's no different for this, you know, modest digital operation. And so Higos and I with TGC have decided to kick off a Patreon page for those who are interested. If you are able to support us, and no stress if you can't, for those who are going to pop into the DMs and say, you know, it's money hungry and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. No dramas if you can't at all. Nothing changes for you. Everything with TGC remains the same. But we've been thinking about it really seriously, and we decided, you know, we didn't want our Patreon page to be a tip jar. We wanted to make sure supporters were getting something decent in return. So, like, our Patreon page is going to be where the dark stuff lives, the loose stuff, the stuff unencumbered by brand considerations. You know, not that brands ever.
There's certainly things that you can't say on Channel 7, for instance.
Exactly.
You might be able to say if you're being, you know, supported by the lovely people out there who are watching and listening to this stuff out there.
Oh, you look down the barrel of the camera, because I know News Limited is now putting our TGC cast up, our visual stuff. Anyway,
right, exactly.
We're not getting any money for that. It's just ripped. It's like Daily Mail stuff. So If you are a Patreon subscriber, that's what you're going to get.
What do they get?
You're going to get a bonus podcast every week. So a new podcast for you, for your ears only. Hey, special private feed.
We're about to record that. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, it's Ask TGC Fridays. It's the looser, darker Ask TGCs, basically. We're going to be answering that long and extended, going into sordid detail, answering the questions. And it's Ask TGC Fridays because it's for those who are nervous about playing the next day and they have things they want to get off their chest.
Friday is the most anxiety-driven day for sure.
Exactly. So plumbing the loose, dark depths of club cricket there, you're also going to get exclusive access to TGC essays, long-form writing from Higos and I, you know, covering the rhythms of clubland. Those of you who saw the story on Facebook this week, for example, 2,500 words or something like that, just going into a very deep expose to deal with Friday nights before cricket.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you there's already one up there on the Patreon page. Mm. There's already one ready to go. It's 1,800 words, and it's on how to get through a Saturday when you're dismissed at 10:47 a.m. The art and the science of being a top-order batsman getting through the day. What do you do? You know, how do you manage your pavilion conversations? Do you score? Do you go on a lap? What happens with that person that
you're
on
a lap
with? How do you
actually literally get through? The practicalities of getting through a day. And you're out in the AMs.
Exactly. You're out at 10:47 AM. You realise there's 12 hours left in this game and you don't bowl. Okay, so that's long-form stories with Patreon. You're also going to get every month club dream, cricket dream analysis interpreted by a clinical psychologist. So I've got a clinical psychologist on board. You're going to write in your cricket dreams and they're going to be answered by a trained clinical psychologist. Okay, so someone said the other day, they wrote in and they said, you know, I have the normal dream where I'm padding up, I'm going out to bat, but all of a sudden I'm batting with scissors.
I saw that. I didn't see that. Okay. What does that
mean?
We're
not going to speculate. We're going to get a psychologist in to tell you.
I could speculate.
To tell you the meaning of scissors in dreams.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what you're going to get for the Patreon. That's $1 a week. That's a coffee a month for all of that. It's 4 podcasts a month.
You don't have to do this.
And you don't have to do it. That's for $5 a month. If you want to go in at the $10 a month.
What do they get?
You're going to get, we're calling it cricket tarot readings. So on top of everything you just said, you're going to get a private, you're going to get a personalised 30-second to 1-minute video. We talk positively about your character, your circuit style, your position in the social hierarchy. That's a direct message to you. Or unless you request a masochist reading, in which case we'll do the same, but we'll do the opposite.
Yep.
You know, we'll say why everything about you is wrong and bad. Yep. We're also going to be compelled to read your Ask TGC on the weekly show, so long as it's legal and complies with base level moral and ethical precepts, which we will determine.
Okay, so Pez, one more time, where do they find this?
Patreon.com/gradecricketer. Okay. We've started it off. It's a little, if you can support it, great. If you can't, no dramas.
Yeah.
No dramas.
Do what you can. If you can't, don't worry about it.
Exactly.
All right, let's get into the actual cricket now.
Yes.
England versus Pakistan. Let's start with that. England versus Pakistan. Now, we're recording this on Saturday because we're fucking idiots.
Yes.
Now, we're recording this because we have to record this today. But like, so the state of play at the moment is, Pakistan are batting. They're 8 for something. The lead is 8 for 240, essentially. Yeah. That's the lead moment, right?
They've got a lead at 240.
So this game is going to be a cracking finish.
It's a good test match, swinging back and forth, lots of players making important contributions, but no team getting away. This is cricket in England. Like bravo to cricket in England. This always happens.
It's the best place, mate.
It's the best place to play. Yeah.
This never happens in Australia.
Yeah.
The game's over in the first innings.
Exactly.
So often.
Yes. So it's on a knife edge, and that's just what happens with cricket in England. I mean, just one thing I want to note.
Go.
Mohammed Abbas to Ben Stokes walking down the wicket. It's Italian kissy fingers, that stuff. Nicking that off bail, nibbling it away, same pace as James Vince. Mm. Oh, yeah. That's the stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I live for that.
Yeah. So many times I've watched this test match already, which is it's a great matchup.
Yeah.
And Pakistan are so exciting because what the fuck are they going to turn out day to day? They're like really young team. The bowling attack's super young, obviously, in the same Shah, 17. Shane Afridi's 19 or something. They're young, couple of leggies. It's exciting. So this team could be anything or it could be nothing.
Yeah.
But like some of the highlights, like Rizwan played an off drive last night and I saw it and went, oh,
yeah.
It was just a visceral. I didn't mean to. Yeah, but it was exciting.
That's probably even and then, get to Bubba.
Fucking Abbas. Abbas. Remember when we saw him when he was playing against Aaron Finch and he was just blowing up Finch's pad.
Yeah.
Mohammed Abbas is getting Dom Sibley out every single time, just hitting those pads, getting those big long legs out of the way. Yeah. He's hitting the pads.
Blowing up
that front pad.
It's not violent.
It's not, because Nassim Shah is sexual language. It's like, it's get it through the chest, Pezza.
Yeah.
That's what that is. But then the Abbas.
Did you say there was a bit of a back and forth, well, not back and forth, but like someone questioned Jofra's pace again in the first innings, and he said, you know, they said, well, Nazim's able to go at sort of, you know, 85, 90 mile an hour. And he said, yeah, let's see how he's going in the second innings. So there's some shots fired there from Joffre. I guess we'll see.
I don't know. I don't really care about that stuff, man.
Just so like, let's just move on from that. Just let that go.
No, yeah. we'll just let Archer bowl. I'm just sick of the Archer stuff already.
Yeah.
Because it's actually interesting. Well, we could talk about this because Broad and Anderson are just the kings of England. That works. You want to go into that first?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, and I just find it so interesting because Broad took 3 wickets in the first inning, so he was leading wicket-taker again. He's just England. He's Broad. So good in England.
Yep.
We've seen this over and over again. Anderson, same thing. But the point being that, I feel like England don't really care about the series against Pakistan or the West Indies or New Zealand or fucking even India necessarily. It's all about, winning the right kind of series at the right time. And obviously the big series coming up for England is going to be in the Ashes in 2021.
That's a problem.
Unless the IPL is played then. So I just feel like what's the point of taking Wokes, for instance, to England? What's the point of taking Anderson, to Australia? Mm. What's the point of taking those guys to Australia again? So Anderson, for instance, has been on 4 tours to Australia. That's 20 test matches. How many test matches do you reckon he's won, Pez? Mm. 3. Mm. In the time they won 3-1, 2010-11, the only 3 times he's won a test match.
If your bowling attack is centred around Broad and Anderson in Australia next year.
Yeah.
Evidence suggests it won't work.
Yeah.
You know, there's literal
history.
There's objective history.
It won't work.
Background, yeah.
Now, the year that they won, Anderson was leading wicket-taker, to be fair. I think he had something 20, 24 wickets.
Every dog has his day.
But for instance, that series, I'm sure English fans, every dog has his day. He's got almost 600 test wickets. Yeah.
That's not me. That's a Jiminy Cricketer.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I just feel like, that series, 2010-11, no one thinks the bowlers won that. Everyone knows that Cook just fucking – Cook and Trot, we just couldn't get him out. Yeah. We tried everything.
They loved to stick that series.
Couldn't get him out. So it was just a bit like he was part of that series, sure. But when England won, they had Bresnan, Finn, Tremlett. So it's more just like height-based selections, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So, or chest in Bresnan's case.
Yeah. So, yeah, true. But the point being is like Archer's going to be so important for them because he's control and his pace and his bounce in Australia.
And Wood.
Wood is, well, his pace, isn't he?
Mm.
His pace, so that's something.
What
I'm saying is, Anderson, what's the point?
Can they do it? Well, but then the philosophical question is, is the Pakistan Test Series and the West Indies Test Series in England as important as away in Australia? Commercially, no. Eyeballs-wise, no. But a home summer, you've got to win at home. How actually the country stays psychologically together.
Right.
So, and if you need Broad and Anderson to win at home in the summer
–
and then that gets in the way of Wood and Archer and other guys coming through, then you kill yourself going to Australia.
Mm.
It's a pretty nasty conundrum they've got there. I mean, they dropped Stuart Broad for one game and he was literally shaking. He gave an interview saying he almost went into convulsions.
Yeah, he had conniptions.
Mm.
I've had conniptions, Bez.
All the time, daily.
So, Steve Finn, who was on the show last week, I didn't ask him this actually, but he took 6 wickets during the week playing county cricket, and he's still in the Lions setup, the England A setup. You know, he's a chance to go to Australia again. He has won there before, but I feel like he's much more likely to actually take wickets than Anderson.
You need guys to go through the chest. As simple as that.
Go through the chest.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I guess you play night games though. Anyway, that's a whole different thing.
Hey, let's talk about the Big Four going on. This fucking Big Four conversation where
Bubba hit 70. So
Bubba hit 70, and then all of a sudden he's in the top 4, and Joe Root's out.
Big Four.
So, I should preface this conversation more delicately in that, the Big Four was a concept created maybe about two and a half years ago, where the Big Four was Williamson, Coley, Smith, and Joe Root. And that's kind of been the best 4 batsmen in the world who, they all contribute to the team equally and they always win games and blah, 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 blah. And then over time, Joe Root has his form just slipped a little bit, and then Babar Azam has scored some runs, and now I think, Bubba's actually in, and Joe Root, where is he now? Pez, thoughts?
Okay, well, the Big Four is a marketing concept, right? It doesn't actually exist, and I think it should be renamed the Big Boys for starters. Right. I think these guys are big boys, and the reason they're big boys, and I think the category should be this, is that you're a big boy when you play – you consistently play innings that win games for your side. They're decisive innings. Let's forget – the number of runs or the arbitrary celebration of 100 or 50 and all that kind of malarkey.
Mm.
It's literally playing innings that puts a game to bed. You cannot lose after it. Smith, big boy.
Big boy.
Coley, big boy. Williamson, big boy.
You can't say that with those dead eyes to me.
A couple of years ago, Root, pretty big boy.
Yeah.
Let's go through some numbers. Smith, 62, average of 62 from 73 tests, 26 tons. Coley, 53, average from 86 tests, 27 tons. Williamson, average of 51 from 80 tests, 21 tons. I'll give him that because he doesn't get to play against New Zealand.
Yeah.
Williamson.
Yeah.
Root, average of 48 from 94 tests, 17 tons, Hates of 50. So how's Smith meant to feel about Joe Root? I got 9 more tons than you in 42 fewer innings, but we're in a big four together. We're a big boys together. Mm. Spinning chips. Now, Babar Azam averages 45 from 26 tests, 5 tons.
Yeah.
In the 90s, you'd side mouth that that's, you know, you'd give it up with those numbers in Australia if you were playing Shield.
Give it up.
But he's averaging 70 from his last 12, and he did hit an on drive at Adelaide Oval last year where Gideon Hay said, oh, Babar. the charge against Root, who could be a big boy, is he hasn't won matches for England lately. With the stick. He hasn't had a stick that's gone, the game's over. Yeah. That's what a big boy's got to do.
Yeah. Fuck off with your big boy. So someone wrote in an RCDC, maybe it might have been last week or week before, and someone said, like, thoughts on Joe Root averaging 75 with a GM and now he's averaging, with a New Balance, he's averaging 40 or something. Like, Joe Root in the last, like, 2 years has not been in the top 5 batsmen in the world, let alone the – like, and also Smith and Coley, it's a bit like Messi and Ronaldo for me. Those two were –
That's right. And then,
like,
separate.
And then, like, Williamson's like Suarez.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, just like awesome. That's like Joe Root's a fucking worldie. He's so good at batting. Right? I'm not saying he's rubbish. I'm just saying, like, he ain't close to Coley or Smith.
And nor would Joe say that. Not that
nor
I know
would
him.
He.
Nor would he say, I'm
follows
a big
the account,
boy. I'm a big four. I'm in the big four.
Not a big
and
boy.
Don't you forget it.
You know, he's got some Ellen DeGeneres stuff going on as well at the same time. You like those kind of jokes?
Yeah, Ellen. Does he really? Oh, I see. Yeah, because he looked the same. Something. Yeah. Oh, man.
When he looked like Ellen Moore, when he had fresh face.
Can't get enough.
Yeah, can't get enough of that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I mean, were people really outside of England saying, like, no, Joe Root's he's a big boy? Were they?
I don't know if they are.
He comes to Australia next year. He scored some big boy runs. Yeah. He can put his big boy pants on. He can be back with the big boys.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Labuschagne's played 14 tests, average 63. Is he a big boy?
You can't be Bubba Azam and have 12 digs and he'd be a big boy.
It's okay. Don't laugh too much. Reviews.
Mate, Joss Butler. You know I'm a big Butler guy.
I do.
I'm a big boy of the big Butlers.
Okay.
Fuck, there's too many bees in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit going on with Butler.
So
his runs, I questioned his runs a little while ago. Like, where are the Butler runs was what I was saying.
He's starting to get to the point where people are saying, like, he needed 100 in his last innings. He hit 38, sort of scratched his way to 38 overnight as we go to where. Yeah. On top of that, more keeping mistakes. He dropped one or missed one, an outside edge from Sean Masood, who went on to hit 156.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's 156.
Yeah.
He's got keepers breathing down his neck in England, keepers who are, are indisputably
keepers,
cleaner.
There are keepers everywhere in that England setup.
Everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's a keeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking
folks. Yeah.
Yeah. Folks. Yeah. Wouldn't mind a bit of folks.
Well, for obvious reasons that we've discussed here on the show. And this is the thing with Butler, you know, 44 tests, averages 31. That's a good keeping average. Someone says, what is your keeper average at number 7? 31?
Yeah, but in this game he's batting 6. Can your number 6 average 31?
Well, probably a little bit, you know.
But if your big boy is number 4 and he's Joe Root.
Yeah, it depends where you put your big boy. So the problem is that, like, it's like Shane Watson. Like, he's a victim of his own potential. He's only got one ton. And it's
like
you should be better. So now you're actually pushed down a little bit. Now, the problem Butler has.
What's his problem?
Well, West Indies and Pakistan coming out this summer.
Yeah.
This is the cash-in summer.
Yeah, cash-in summer.
Every player needs their cash-in summer.
Sean Marsh runs.
Yeah, Travis Head runs.
Travis Head runs. Yep.
But you need that. You need to cash in. Because then you've got India, you know, with this big three situation coming out with cricket. Mm-hmm. You've got India and Australia in the next 2 years. That's going to be tough. That's tough runs. Mm. So you've got to cash in with West Indies, Pakistan in the COVID environment. No one's around.
Yep. No pressure.
Sure, Josh, and the problem Josh has, he's got white ball capital, great white ball capital. Yep. Does anyone in the game strike it more clean? Is there a nicer swing of the bat?
Well, yeah, that's why I like the Butler runs, because it's just clean.
He's got
stable
good
runs, round the ground, tricks, flicks, fucking all sorts going
fast
on.
Fast hands, fast twitch.
Yeah, fast hands, fast twitch.
Yeah.
I love my Butler runs. Yeah. I want more of them.
I want, like, white ball Butler runs. How do you transfer it to red ball? They're giving him every chance. He's not taking them.
The keeping stuff is really interesting because, like, the catches that he's dropped, the hardest catch as a wicket keeper is if you're up to the stumps and it's front foot nick. Mm. Now, people will say, like, should have caught that. And, like, when you're at that level, these guys, now, believe it or not, Pez, these guys are a little bit better than me.
Okay.
But so, like, but the hardest thing is, like, front foot nick, you cannot change your hands in time. Like, the ball either goes into the gloves or not. You can put yourself in a good position to catch those balls. And I think he's doing that. But literally, like, so, for instance, conversely, the easiest catch as a wicketkeeper, up to the stumps, back foot, cutting nick. That's the easiest one because the ball will deviate very, like, the ball has to travel a very small amount from
this is your masterclass.
The nick to the gloves.
Yeah.
Front foot. It can go anywhere. It goes in or out. That's basically and he's dropped a couple of catches like that. But when it happens over again, then he misses the stumping, then the runs, it's all a bit like, can we do better? Can we get some folks in? Can we get some more salad?
You've got to compensate with your attractive but voluminous runs.
Yes.
And they're attractive, but they're not voluminous.
Anyway, so who's going to win this game? Give me your – no, don't do that. Mate, England versus Ireland is a thing that we should briefly just touch on. Yep. And I find the most interesting thing about this – now – the squad is like they literally played this game the day before the test match started. So it is two different teams, two squads. But it's still – well, Tom Banton said before the game that this England ODI side is the hardest team in the world, sports team in the world to get into. Then they lost the game against Ireland. Now, Ireland are no mugs, to be fair. They're not dreadful. And I feel like we're a little bit spoiled in Australia because we don't have – like we're not playing against like Papua New Guinea or Hong Kong or fucking the Cayman Islands. I'd be interested in that team, to be fair, the Cayman Islands. But, like, so England have more chances to lose games against, like, more associate nations because England have lost their last internationals against the Netherlands, Scotland and Ireland now, which is funny. But, it's like, funny. Australia don't play these countries very often. And if we played a B-grade side against Ireland, for instance, chances are we're probably going to lose a game or two,
yep.
You know. But when we see England lose, we like that. It's funny.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got too much more to add. Than that.
I didn't laugh too fair.
Geographical isolation kind of protects us against losses to minnows.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, whereas if we were in Europe, which we are in terms of our monarchy,
that's true.
You actually can't be head of state.
To hear from the Queen during COVID just to support us.
Be head of state of this country if you're from the country.
You can't be. Oh, yeah, that's going to make me think. Okay. Yeah, you can't.
If you're Australian, you can't be head of state of Australia.
No, that's.
Yeah. And that makes sense.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mate, heading to the Australian news. Oh, is there anything else to talk about at England Island?
Andy Balburny needed to bounce back after Vince bounced him out. So it was good to see
him score 100. Yeah, that's true. He got 100, yeah. Paul Sterling's a guy who's been around for ages. Well, he's like 9 ODI 100s.
Yeah.
No mugs.
Love Ireland.
Mate, Australian cricket news. It's sort of coming up in terms of like so there's state cricket, there's the Afghanistan Test Series, there's the WBBL, the BBL, and basically the Test Series against India. Those are the big things coming up. I guess you could go through the whole calendar because the Women's World Cup now, which was going to be played in February in New Zealand, has now been moved to 2022. You were saying just before we started that the World Cup, the T20 World Cup, the Men's T20 World Cup that was going to be in Australia in September has now been moved to 2022, and India have decided that they're going to play that in India. Is that right?
Okay, so there's no World T20 this year now in Australia.
Right.
That World T20 will be in India in 2021. And then Australia is going to do a World T20 in 2022. So basically, next year and the year after, you're going to India or Australia for World T20 World Cups. I got a feeling that T20 World Cups are just going to be every year in probably Australia or India for a while. That's all you got to worry about.
Okay. But there's also 2 million cases in India today of COVID.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That, and 1 in 11 are being reported as being tested. So,
Okay. So fuck all being tested. There's 2 million people who have COVID at the moment. All good. All good. No problems there. Now, the Afghanistan Test Series, that's supposed to be played in Perth on November 21. That's gone, surely.
Yeah.
Okay. The main question is, I think, the Boxing Day Test. Yep. Where's that being played?
Oh, well, I don't know.
Pezzy lad.
I don't know, but there's obviously a darkly humorous conversation about whether it will be in Adelaide or Perth.
Right.
Darkly humorous in the sense that, you know, like Melburnians own sport in a lot of ways, but for correct and appropriate reasons, it's been discussed as being played elsewhere. Mm. I don't know. I mean, where would you have it? I like Adelaide because Adelaide's just a fucking king ground and just looks beautiful. And
I love the city of Perth.
Yes.
But Adelaide Oval is a better place to play cricket than the football stadium at Perth Stadium, which is a really nice stadium, but it's a football stadium.
Yeah. But I like the wicket though.
Yeah, but then didn't the wicket get the worst review of the summer? And it was the most exciting one. That was a year ago.
Yeah.
Whatever. That was when the same Shah played in Australia.
Yeah, and it was India the year before that, and we just bumped him, and it was fast, and it was Australian, and
that's
it felt
true.
Safe.
Because the wicket there is actually from the practice wicket to the Wacker.
Yeah.
That's right. It's a drop in.
Yeah.
It's a drop
Wacker
in.
Soil.
Yeah, Wacker soil, whatever that means. So, yeah, because I think that, so I didn't realise this, but you know how in Manchester there's the hotel which is attached to Old Trafford?
Yep.
They're doing that at Adelaide now as well, and that's been built, and it's going to be finished in October apparently, or September.
Bubble
Boys there. So the training hub is going to be in Adelaide. Adelaide is one of, for people who haven't been to Adelaide to watch a test match there, go if you can. I mean, borders are closed, so fuck, do whatever you like. Borders are closed, do whatever you like. That's my message. Fucking idiot. But yeah, you should go. It's amazing. And then Perth is a great place to go as well. Mm. So if all four tests are played there this year, five tests are played there this summer, good. Mm. I'm happy with that. Perth is a great time for the eastern states as well to watch cricket. Mm. Day test match. But then, yeah, so that's my summation. Thoughts?
Nice. Nothing more to add. That'll be fine.
Okay. Brennan Julian is on the show. Rob Key is on the show. I'm looking forward to transcribe that later. Hashtag I said, you see a couple of belters in there, including answering that question we didn't do last week about love in North Yorkshire, Pez. I don't want to overstate that, but it's a good one. But before we get into that, Manscaped is a new sponsor come on board. And let me tell you, I'm excited about this one, Pez. I'm excited about Manscaped for many reasons.
People, you know, this podcast, it may surprise many, skews to men. It skews fractionally towards males.
Yeah.
And so a couple of blokes may have heard Manscaped come across other podcasts as well. Mm. We're going to show you about this product. Here goes.
Yeah. So support for the Great Cricket Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Can you tell why I'm excited to talk about this?
I think I can, but I'd like to know more.
Well, it's an important we've actually never really spoken about this on the show about like showering. Well, because it's kind of gone out of the game a little bit with like divisions in showers and stuff in terms of literal dividers, not like some sort of ethical division. Mm. But yeah, big like pubart was a big thing. Like people like grooming, showing off, especially in the UK. There was like a bit of competition going around.
Yep.
I would have fucking killed for manscaping back then.
Really?
Like the actual product as opposed to, you know, getting there in there with like some trimmers.
Yeah.
You know, secateurs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Nail cutters.
Yeah. Edward Scissorhands over the pubes.
Exactly.
It's true. I think there's a lot of blokes listening to this as they do their supermarket shopping quickly as well, get in and out.
People could be in the shower listening to this right now.
That's a good point.
People could also be in surgical theatres as they played before.
Exactly.
This is literally being put out through surgical theatres at the moment.
Yes, we have had feedback to that effect.
Yeah.
It up until this point, it's been very difficult to have a convenient, quick and effective way of trimming your pubic hair.
Yep.
Of getting what we'd call that optical inch.
Yeah.
But we do have it now.
The optical inch is a huge factor.
Manscaped has just launched in Australia. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job. And through this code, you can be one of the first to experience their life-changing products here in Australia.
So, Pez, the electrical trimmer engineered team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, which is what we're promoting today.
Yeah, lawnmower.
Lawnmower. See, people in quarantine, Pez, like you can't go out there back in the dating game and have all quarantine pubes.
Yeah.
You can't go out there, but like summer in Australia is just coming up, UK season right now. Sure, you can't get changed. There are no changing rooms right now in the UK, but that's no excuse still. People in cars going to games, people are getting changed somewhere. Mm. Presentation is key.
So we've got here their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. A couple of years ago,
that's the worst.
And when we talk about rigs a lot on this show, most of the rig conversation from fans concerns you. It concerns your Instagram page, and it concerns your 4% body fat, excellent torso, I suppose, and arms. Do you only train arms?
Okay.
The only stuff I get in relation to rigs is, fuck, something's going on with Pez's eyebrows there, which is fair enough too.
Right.
I've got to say, as a bald man, I'm kind of happy that something's happening.
Sure.
But Manscaped is going to be able to help me in this regard. Mm-hmm. I have had a manscaping accident on my head before using a razor, and I just actually clipped a fair bit of skin off it. Now, that's not a very good. I'm talking about accidents.
Yeah.
Accidents that can be mitigated against with Manscaped 3.0 with the lawnmower. And I love the name lawnmower.
Yeah.
directly, it's targeted directly at men. Mm. You know, as we've always said, never smart, always hard. Mm-hmm. Lawnmower. Like, imagine a physical lawnmower over your ball hair. You can't do that.
God. But
yeah, exactly.
So the whole point of trimming the ball hair is to make it a clean presentation to as a gift to your partner in a consensual setting. Mm. But if you've got nicks and cuts all over the place, all of a sudden you got, it's like Scarface basically.
Where are you at in the ball trimming thing, by the way? Like, are you, how low do you go?
Like, I'm not going to number one.
Yeah.
That's also that's
part. It starts getting itchy.
When you get to, like, if you're, like, sort of 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, you know, you can probably get away with number one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 34. I don't think I'm – like, if I'm meeting someone and I'm pulling off a number one, they're a bit like, is everything okay? And I'll have to tell them no.
I've been manscaping too much.
So there is a level.
Okay, so the
water – we should get through this ad.
Yeah, that's right. There's all sorts of stuff with this product, though, isn't there? Water-resistant technology. Yeah. There's an LED light, illuminates grooming areas for a closer, more precise trimming.
Right.
7,000 RPM motor. With
charging stand.
Quiet stroke technology, charging stand. That's for you to trim that junk of yours. Mm. You get 20% off and free shipping.
Free shipping, 20% off. Amazing.
With the code TGC at manscaped.com. Get around us. Support this. Manscaped.com. Code TGC for 20% off if you want to trim that junk of yours the best way possible.
And what better way to introduce Rob Key and Brennan Julian on the show?
Okay, here goes. We've got a former England representative, Kent legend, and now full-time commentator and pundit with Sky Sports international and domestic cricket coverage. He's got 20,000 first-class runs to his name with 54 tons, a highest test score of 221, and these are my words and others, the bright star in English cricket punditry. Mm-hmm. It's Rob Key, author of the recently released book, Oi Key, and he's on the Great Cricketer. Keezy, if I may call you that, hello.
How you going? Was it my evening for you guys? Morning for me?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Always the way. Now, I want to start with this book that's out. Now, like, we haven't teed this up in any way to promote your book, but the book is going to kind of capture a lot of what we want to talk about. Oi Key is the tale of a journeyman cricketer, claims to shine a light on the darkest recesses of the dressing room, which is pretty much our wheelhouse. So, like, when you shone that light into the darkest recesses, what did you find?
Well, I don't know about the darkest recesses, but just like everyone thinks that professional sport and professional cricket is like that people have the secrets and it's like this magical place where they just know they're just so much better at cricket than everyone and they know all the answers. There's more nonsense goes on in a dressing room, I think, than any other office or workplace in the history of anything, really. You know, I suppose, really, because you spend in county cricket, we spend so much time with each other. You get to know people just inside out, and you get so bored. And boredom just brings out the worst in people at times. So there's moments, I suppose, when, you know, that you can't talk about, and others you can. And I was lucky. I played with some of the great players, you see. Well, I wasn't a great player myself, but I played with some of them.
Well, speaking of getting bored with some of the greats, so there's a story going around that you were playing for Kent and Shane Warne was playing for Hampshire. It was a game at the Rose Bowl and there was a rain delay and you guys started playing a bit of poker. And it started during a rain delay, but then it went all night. I mean, like, you know, first of all, how much was Warne throwing down some cash? I know you're a gambling man, Casey, but, you know, talk us through the poker at the Rose Bowl during a rain delay.
Well, so Warne, back in the early days, before he was playing poker every night with Joe Hashem, who won the World Series of Poker, was like the rest of us, where he was pretty average at it. So we turned up at the Rose Bowl and, yeah, it was one of, you look at the forecast and it just looks like it's going to rain all day. So by then, Warney's got like a whole poker table at the Aegeus Bowl, Rose Bowl, as it was there. And where every time it rained, we would rush in and we'd continue this massive game of poker. And it wasn't for huge cash because we were county cricketers. Warne was, you know, a rock star, wasn't he, really? So we couldn't match him in that, but he just loved that competitive stuff. And I think we finished at about 3 o'clock at night, thinking that it was going to rain the entire day's play the next day. And it turns out that we ended up, you know, having a bat for that day. You know, Warne was used to, you know, Warne's used to getting no sleep at night and getting up to God knows what. So for him, it was like he completely stuffed all of us. I was sort of, you know, in the dressing room after getting out, almost falling asleep. But the poker just continued, you know. It became more important than the cricket game, actually.
I love this idea of, like, just keeping the old school alive, you know, of cricket, because I think a lot of people who listen to this cast will identify with that approach to the game, especially playing, like, grade or club cricket in Australia and the UK as well. Like, can you give us a couple of memories or even just shine that light again on, like, life as a young county pro, you know, just when you started that circuit and just some of the things that went on there?
Well, you sort of look back now. I mean, I went at Kent, the first overseas that I played with as a 19-year-old was Carl Hooper. If you remember, cool sort of Carl was just as laid back as anyone. Now, he was a great player in county cricket. If the motor racing was on, you could almost sell his runs. You just write him off because he was never, ever going to get a score. He walked, I mean, this is, yeah, he's probably just shy of captain in the West Indies and he's watching the F1, which I can't bear. I don't know how it's even on telly. And, you know, he's walked out without his box because he barely got that out to the middle in time, schnicked off early, then came back and watched the motor racing. And we would, you know, then we had people like Dravid. Dravid came. And Rao Dravid is one of the great men of cricket, I think. I think he's regarded as that, and that's absolutely fair. And Rao Dravid, I used to think, I learned how to play spin just from picking the brains of Rao Dravid. I watched him and Warne in a game, going at it in county cricket. So you get this sort of first hand where he's unlocking the secrets to how you play spin. And I think pretty much all we did, when he turned up, he said things like geez and shucks and, he was so mild-mannered, and then all we taught him was how to swear and a few dodgy words. But, yeah, and then it goes on Murali when he turned up. Murali was the, you know, again, he turned up with stuff signed from the World Cup that they won for anyone who had a benefit. And, you know, I ended up going on holiday with him to Sri Lanka, and he was just such a nice bloke, but he was such a child, so he'd play cards in the dressing room with him. And he was so loud, you know, he would just sort of run around the dressing room abusing everyone. And he was learning English as well at the same time. So any stereotypes, Murali would jump on them and he would just hammer people, especially our physio who was from New Zealand. So you can imagine the sort of line of attack he went on him, you know. So you get to see these people in for what they're really like. And most of them, nearly all of them, were just such, you know, the better the cricketer, the better the person. As Warne and Murali are. I mean, Warne and Murali, in my opinion, are two of the greatest people I've met.
Mm-hmm. If we go back to your, like, the very beginning of your sort of professional days, I suppose. In 1998, the England, the 19 World Cup, England actually won the tournament, sort of came from, well, it was a surprise win, I think it's fair to say. I was going through some of the names, Kezi, and like who was playing that competition, who was playing that tournament that year. There was like the Marshall brothers for New Zealand were playing. I think Kyle Mills was playing as well. Yeah. India had Muhammad Kaif, Harbhajan Singh and Vrinda Sehwag. Mm. They didn't even make the final. So it must have been a pretty weak team apart from those three. England had yourself, Graham Swan, Owe Shah was playing as well. But you guys won the tournament. And what are some of your memories about, you know, the early days of, well, the under-19 World Cup, I suppose?
India, whenever you played under-19 cricket against India, they were never that great a side back then. They are now, India under-19. Mm. But you almost, because a lot of them were 16, 17, and we were under-19, we played county cricket, sort of gnarly old pros even at that stage. So I don't remember, you know, when someone said, oh, you played against Sehwag, I thought, really? I thought they were terrible, India under-19 and Harbhajan. But that, again, you know, Swanee I'd known since I was 10. And Swanee, I don't know, you know, Graham Swan will talk more than anyone in the world, more than Murali or any of them, so much so. I remember rooming with Swanee, and every night he would just have conversations with himself, but he's a mimic. So he would constantly be, you know, he'd go from being a male to a female, and he'd just arguing with himself in two different characters. But Swanee, shut up. But he was probably the worst thing we ever did, or one of the worst things we did on that trip. We rang as a guy called Dave Fulton, who played at Kent, who was, you know, he hadn't had the greatest start to his career, but he was just starting to come good a bit later on. So we rang him, and Swanee can do a brilliant David Lloyd impression. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember where England were touring or wherever it was, but we got, so Swanee rang Dave Fulton, the player, as David Lloyd, telling him that he was going to get selected for England. But Swanee's impression was so good that we almost had to ring him, Dave Fulton, an hour later just to say, by the way, that was us. You haven't. In the end, I started to think that's when we'd gone a little bit too far.
No, that's fine.
It's funny, speaking of going too far, like I'm sure many would sort of yearn for the old school day as well. You know, it's a cliche to say, you know, when men were men, stuff like that. But I will, when men were men.
Oh, yeah.
And you could sort of say what you want on field a little bit, fewer stump marks and whatnot. Today you've got a more sanitised approach to the game. I don't know if the players like it, but you've, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you've got – you know, the best Australia's captain can do is talk about Rishabh Pant babysitting. You know what I mean? He just sort of feels like something's lost. I mean, is that something you can speak to?
Yeah. I mean, now, by the end of my career at Kent Side, I've been, 36, and this generation was coming through. The Sam Billings, Bell Drummond, Joe Denley was a good mate of mine, probably a little bit older. And I remember as a captain, you have to try and find a way to relate to people. And it's high. If you're 36 and guys are 19, I found it quite hard. So the only thing I could do was learn how to play FIFA on Xbox because a lot of them just live by that. When I got in that Kent side, first of all, the difference was we played in my first one-day competition was the Benson and Hedges, it was known as. If you remember that, it was like a 50-over comp. But it was sponsored by Benson and Hedges, the cigarette brand. And I reckon there must have been 400 fags put in the room every game. And let me tell you, it was a scrum to see who could get them. You know, and I was 19, and at that stage, my mates used to smoke. So, you know, 400 Benson Hedges, I'm thinking, I'm on probably, I'm on $6,000 for the whole year. So I'm thinking, you know, I could do with them. But you would not get near them because nearly every player smoked. Now it's the opposite. You know, you can't imagine, you know, if Benson Hedges got thrown into the dressing room, you'd think probably no one would know what they are. Mind you, that's not quite true. There's maybe a few of them.
Except for Warnie. Warnie finds himself all of a sudden just finding himself right in that camp. obviously, we just said the England-West Indies series, Casey. In 2004, you were playing in the corresponding series, England-West Indies, 2004, just before that 05 Ashes, packed Lord's House, Rob Key comes to the wicket, scores 221, goes past 100, Richie Beno's commentating, the Queen's there, you met the Queen at tea. And I'm just thinking, like how much in every single capacity and every facet of life was 2004 just a better year?
Yeah, but then now than 2020. Yeah. I mean, there's nearly every year in the history. In the history of years, this is the worst year that's ever been, isn't it? You know, I had a new year when everyone's saying, oh, I can't wait for 2020. Well, let's go back and do that again, shall we? But no, it was good. I remember it was a bizarre time. Because in cricket, you don't often have those moments where I spent most of my life wondering where my next run was coming from. But in 2004, you know, I thought, here we go. You know, I'm going all right. And you know, it was just one of those sort of perfect storms. England were a good side. Michael Vaughan was an excellent captain. Mm. You know, he was that sort of captain. Most, the same with coaches and captains at that level. It's very hit and miss. Mm. And Michael Vaughan was outstanding. And you just sort of go out there and you had this sort of freedom with Andrew Strauss. And it was like the next generation coming through. And the West Indies weren't particularly good, to be honest. You know, I do the commentary now and I'm forever arguing with NASA. In particular, because NASA will just, you know, coat off everyone that I played against, you know, Omari Banks, and then he'll put up himself, you know, then he'll put up, you know, Courtney Walsh, Wazimat Kram, Wacker Yunis, all these. But I'm sort of trying to impress. I said they were only good because you lot of that generation were terrible. You know, the England team then didn't win anything. You won one game, one series in the dark against Pakistan, but no one could even see the ball. Yeah, apart from that, you know, we got to number one in the world, my generation. You guys, you know, Australia used to beat you every time. You know, but anyway.
Just on Australia, Keezy, I'm just mining for more stories here, but you're at Kent. You had the chance to play with both Andrew Symonds and Steve Waugh. Was it at the same time? I mean, what does an Andrew Symonds, Rob Key, and late years Steve Waugh dynamic look like?
Yeah, so Simo became one of my best mates back then. I used to room with him, and he would play. He turned up at Kent in this, you call them Cobras?
What's the Cobra? Cowboy Cobras, hat? Yeah.
And he loved that. Is it J.M. Williams? R.M. Williams or whatever. So I'm at the room with him, and sort of we have a few drinks. And at 10 o'clock at night, as we're going to sleep, or 11 o'clock, he puts on this John Williamson. Yeah. And I'm sitting there, I'm 22, you know, I'm into, you know, like probably, I don't know, dance music, whatever you want to see. You know, I might have been the rave scene or whatever. Yeah. And I've got this bloke who's singing about like Rip Rip Wood Chips and, you know, Billabongs and Waltzing Matilda and stuff. I'm like, mate, what is this? Right. He said, oh, mate. He said, mate, this is proper music. I'm thinking, no, not sure about that. But anyway, Simo was, he was so much fun because we were not the same age. He was a bit older than me. He was such a good cricketer as well. And we enjoyed things on and off the field. And then when Steve Waugh actually turned up, Steve Waugh was a bit my hero growing up because, you know, I was probably 8 or 10 when I was watching him. And we'd gone, the committee, he was staying in the flat that Simo had been given. And we were, you know, I used to stay down there because I lived an hour away from Canterbury where we played. And they sort of said, make sure it's in good order. So we're like, yeah, don't worry. So we gave it a clean. But that night we ended up going out and we went to sort of a student night and somehow a big party ended up back at that flat. So the place has absolutely been turned over. And Steve Waugh gets there at 9 o'clock in the morning and one of my best mates, who doesn't really, he knows a little bit about cricket. He's like a club third teamer. Yeah. He comes out with all the, he doesn't know that they're there or Steve Waugh's coming, but he's got a stinking hangover and he walks out and he's just in his pants and he sort of looks at me and I'm sort of quite embarrassed with Steve Waugh and he says, Keezy, do you know where my socks are? And then he sort of opens his eyes properly and realises the captain of Australia is standing right in front of him. And he just, the sort, he was so starstruck by him. I remember his face, Ben he was called. He's just sort of gone, I said, oh, Ben, this, oh, Simo, sorry, he's gone, Tugger, Ben, Tugger. And he couldn't speak.
Steve Waugh wouldn't have said much either.
He wouldn't have said, yeah. Something outside the mouth.
Yeah.
No, he thought it was quite funny. I'm not sure the 58 committee members that all of a sudden turned up to meet Steve Waugh found it quite as amusing.
Yeah. Okay, you obviously moved on very successfully to, you know, a broadcasting career with Sky. And, you know, in a recent piece for Sky, you were batting in the nets as Rahul Dravid because you two played together at Kent. So I'm just wondering if we can expect some more bowling masterclasses of you impersonating Nasser Hussain when he bowled in Durban when South Africa were 572 for six.
Oh, I don't know about that. Do you know what? I've never seen Nasser bowl. And when I tell you, like, when I play, Nasser was my, that's why my book is called Oi King. I hate the fact I've got a book out, but I got paid for it, so that's it.
Same.
So Freddie Flintoff, I grew up with, he was my best mate. And so this is how England sort of worked then. We're playing against India on my debut, and 2 days before, they're sort of walking around the huddle. This is what I mean, it's nothing special. How they think at times, because Fletcher, the coach, sort of goes, who does first slip? And Fred went, Keezy would do it. And I'm thinking, I don't do first slip. I'm terrible first slip. So anyway, Fletcher sort of says, go on, and you go in there. I thought, what is going on? Surely they have a first slip. This is the England cricket team. And I'm standing at first slip, and after about an hour of the first day, I think Tendulkar's batting or whoever, or Ganguly. I'll just become a name dropper, actually. I'll realize. But anyway, I'm standing, and Nasser used to volley you left, right, and centre, which I didn't know at this stage. I'm 23. And in the middle of an over, Freddie and I start telling Stewie about some of the stories we used to get up to when we were younger. So we're sort of laughing and relaxing. I'm thinking, oh, this is good fun. And Nasser shouts out from mid off in front of everyone, Oi, Key, you fat expletive. I didn't put you there to chat. Your fat effing mate all day. You know, concentrate, yet. And so I'm like, oh my God. And Ganguly sort of laughing at me. And Fred just turned around and said, don't drop one now, Bob.
Speaking of that.
But now, you know, now he's my favourite person in the world. Right? I absolutely love him. He's such a good bloke.
Yeah.
Well, no doubt a lot of that would have been built in the Sky Comm box, and you know, like a lot, it's probably a pretty unforgiving place. A lot of people who've captained England, risen to the top of the game, and I think you've described yourself as at one point being at the bottom of the pundit ladder. You're not there anymore. How do you get to the top of the pundit ladder? And like, do you think the rule? You have any advice for people in Australia who want to get to the top of the pundit ladder? Because it just seems as though you need to just talk about pizza toppings.
Benson and Hedges. Benson and Hedges.
I don't know. It's lucky if you've been an absolute gun player for a start, like Warney and these people, which I obviously was. I honestly don't know. I feel like a bit of a fraud, really. I'm just blagging. I see myself as one of the great blaggers. So when someone asks you a question, I can sort of look like I know what I'm talking about. Yeah, and that's the key, really, I think. It doesn't matter what you say, just try and say it with some conviction, and one person might believe you, is generally my way of thinking about it. And try and imagine that I always try and imagine I'm just with my mates in the pub, probably a bit like your podcast, where you're just trying to have a conversation and try and do it the same way. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty wise words. Finally, someone just wanted to ask, and this is a question. This is one of the deeper philosophical questions in cricket that we've often posed before. And you do get a lot. Speaking of blagging, or also false answers. I think there's a lot of false answers here. But basically, one for you, Keezy. Would you rather make a duck and win, or hit a ton and lose?
Well, that's absolutely no question. I'd always take a ton and lose. I mean, I'd lose every game. Because what happens in the end of that is all my hundreds, I go into the end of the year and I say, thank you very much, I'll have a pay rise and get rid of everyone else. Yeah, I just think anyone who says anything, I have this, anyone who says anything different is a liar. Because, and they might go, no, it's all about the team. And I'm like, okay, you're going to get dropped next game because you've got four noughts in a row. You're going to take 100 and lose, or you're going to take another nought, get dropped, and find yourself, doing whatever job that isn't as good as being a professional cricketer in your eye.
Finally, some honesty.
I think that's over 100 episodes to get that.
Yeah.
Rob Key, thanks so much for your time. We'd never met or had any contact before tonight, so very much appreciate your generosity in coming on to the show, and particularly finishing off so strong and telling everyone what we've all known to be true, which is, cricket's just a selfish game.
100%.
Correct. See you later, boys.
Here goes our next guest. Probably wasn't aware of this at the time, but according to many people, while the Grade Cricketer podcast started in 2016 with an interview of Merv Hughes, it didn't come alive until November 17, 2016, episode number 4, when we interviewed Brendan Julian in person in the halls of Fox Sports, feet up on the desk, etc. It was a super experience. It was a wide-ranging conversation. BJ covered terrain like the West Indies circuit of 95, rig admiration in Australian cricket, and whether or not we, like him, had lifted the Sheffield Shield before. 100-plus episodes later, it's our pleasure to welcome back the man who first comprehensively alphaed the Grade Cricketer with great pleasure, Brendan Julian. Brendan, welcome to Grade Cricketer.
Gents, great to be back. You must have thought around about episode 4 that you guys were done and dusted. You probably thought, well, there's no one else that's going to get on. We'll get Beto because he's actually just walking around the office and looks like he's got nothing to do. So I cannot believe, is it 100? It can't be 100. You're the Bradmans of podcasts in terms of cricket, aren't you?
Well, one of my memories from that, BJ, to go off script, was we texted you from the podcast room and you're in the green room around the corner. It sounds very insidery, but you're in there with AB and Mark Waugh and stuff. Yeah, and you said, come around and get me. And I said, okay. Yeah. So I walked around, knocked on the door, and I said, oh, Brendan. And you're like, what? Just like...
Who are you?
You know what I mean? But that's cricket media.
That's only because you were too scared to ask AB Mark Waugh, and you knew that Mark Waugh would be charging you thousands of dollars, and AB probably didn't even know what a podcast was. So you probably thought, I'm the easy option there. And 100%. Hopefully, if BJ does it, we don't have to actually record it, but it's more of a segue to try and get the other guys in there, I would have thought. Yeah.
We just wanted the chat, to be honest. And then we walked in, you were shirtless, and I thought, well, this is something else. This is a real experience now.
Jeez. I thought it was in the 95. Windy, bloody hell.
Still haven't got Mark or Alan Border yet either. Actually, but anyway, we'll see where we go. Well, BJ, it's you know, it has been almost 4 years since we received that education in the halls of Fox Sports. Fair bit's changed. We're all now suffering at the hands of a global pandemic. Like, how's COVID and, you know, pseudo lockdown life for Brendan Julian?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been very, very difficult. I mean, I've had to homeschool the kids. Will look like most people, but I've actually had to homeschool myself. I mean, Sienna and Jay got two girls, 14 and 17. They're like, I've got no idea what they do at school. I mean, you know, you pay all these school fees and I still can't work out all the equations that they're trying to give to me. So actually it's been homeschooling for me probably in the last three or four months, stuck at home with the family, stuck at home with the wife as well. It couldn't get any worse. So I'm just so happy that we've been able to get out and about a little bit. I've had to walk the dog a fair bit, and I've been playing a bit of golf, actually. I mean, I love my golf, but one of the most disappointing things I've had to do is you're not allowed to hop in the golf cart.
Yeah,
right. And the only reason I like golf is being able to hop in the golf cart and drive around. So I'm walking about 20 kilometres a week, I reckon.
Oh, my God.
I bet. And my back's gone, my knee's gone, and I'm just getting like sore neck and headaches, and it's just a nightmare. So I don't know. I need to fix it up. We need to do something, because I do like social distancing. I've actually been a social distancer for about 10 or 15 years. I like my own company, so that's been good. But walking around the golf course has been a nightmare, and walking the dog's been a nightmare as well. So yeah, it's I'm happy to get back to work. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's probably a bit similar to the players and with the commentators and the broadcasters. You're like looking at ways to stay sharp. I mean, I feel like we're just watching, you know, as we record this, the England and West Indies series is being played out, and it's like it doesn't feel real. It doesn't quite feel like it's actually like it matters or it counts or something. And like, I wonder how hard you reckon it would be, BJ, for you know, the players especially, to sort of focus on training and, you know, trying to be their best when they have no idea when they're going to play again, if they're going to play again, if there's going to be crowds there, what the rules are going to be with the ball, like all this stuff. Do you reckon it'd be really hard to focus on, you know, the future games, I suppose?
I reckon it would be. I mean, I feel a bit sorry for guys like, you know, Stephen Smith and David Warner. I mean, they had a year out of the game. They come back to play a season and they've got it basically another year out.
Yeah.
So that's been difficult. I reckon as a professional sportsman, I mean, you've seen it with the rugby league and the AFL. You know, they're getting back to it, so that's quite good. But, you know, as a professional sport, you like to get out and play.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly when you're locked down and you're sitting around for 4 or 5 months not doing anything and probably even further not knowing when you're going to work next, I mean, I think that's a bit daunting, because, you know, you're so used to being on the road. You're so used to having so much stuff on. And, yes, cricketers and sportsmen will always turn around and go, oh, well, you know, I like to break here and I like to have to get away. But you can't get away. You can't break. You can't do anything.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, you're locked in for 4 or 5 months. You won't be used to it. So
exactly, yeah.
It's like going to boarding school. So I think it'll be really tough. I mean, I watched the West Indies and the England Test match, and I actually couldn't get into it. I mean, I watched it for a little bit. I actually liked the 86-87 West Indies Australia at the MCG. Those old games that are coming up on Fox. I'm loving that. They got cracking crowds.
Yeah.
You know, it's good cricket. It's, you know, the West Indies, you know, the saw one with Viv and Ambrose was playing, and you know, that was amazing. You know, and then all of a sudden you switch on to live cricket, West Indies and England, and you go, mate, it's not even in the same league. So it's difficult. It's tricky, and you know, we're gonna have to get used to it. I can't see us having big crowds, you know, maybe in Sydney and Melbourne for the start of the Big Bash in December. I think Perth and Adelaide and Brisbane will get crowds, but outside of that, I think it's going to be tricky.
I was going to say on that, BJ, like one of the peripheral impacts of COVID has been questions over where to reschedule Melbourne sporting fixtures. You know, we've already seen states doing battle over the AFL grand final. Now you've got a similar thing at the moment in relation to Boxing Day. Like, where do you sit on this? And I guess, like many others, do you feel any like slight dark enjoyment discussing temporary ownership of tightly held Melbourne sporting events?
Mate, I agree. I mean, I think the Boxing Day test match will move to Perth, and I reckon it should move to Perth. If you can't get a crowd at the MCG, then what's the point of having the Boxing Day test there? It sort of defeats the purpose. I mean, day one, day two are the big days in sporting, you know, in the sporting calendar around Australia. So if you can get a crowd in Perth for a West Coast Dockers game and the Derby and get nearly 30,000, I mean, I would be moving the test match, the Boxing Day test, to Perth. I'd be moving the first test, I think, will be in Adelaide, the second one in Perth, and maybe Brisbane for the third one, and then wait to see for Sydney. But I cannot see any reason why you'd be playing in Melbourne if you can't have crowds. So that's the first point. I think the Big Bash in December will start in Perth, and I think they should, you know, just have a hub over there for 2 weeks and just bang the games out in the first two or three weeks, and then maybe move to Brisbane and Adelaide and do it that way. I cannot see teams flying around and, you know, other sort of administrators flying around the country to do games. So I think they've got to lock it down, get those games out of the road in December, and then you can sort December out, and then you wait and see for January. But that's the way I think it's going to happen in December.
What are we going to do with the ball, BJ? Because, I mean, we've seen, obviously, the new laws with the COVID rules that you can't put saliva on the ball. And, you know, if you're using the Jukes and, you know, you're playing in Manchester, it probably won't matter that much. It's still moving around a little bit. But, I mean, when you're using the Kookaburra and you're playing on the MCG or you're playing in Adelaide or whatever, and, like, the thing doesn't move off the straight anyway. I mean, I don't know how you're going to, you know, make the ball move at all.
Back sweat?
I mean, yeah, back sweat, yeah. Mm. Bottle tops?
Yeah, back sweat. Yeah. I'm all for scratching now. I think you should be able to work on the ball. I mean, I was never a big one to go against, not ball tampering, but working on the ball to make it go reverse. I think you should be able to do that. Mm. I mean, no, you can't do bottle caps and you can't do sandpaper, of course. Mm. But I don't see why you cannot work on the ball to get it reverse. I mean, if you can't use saliva, then why can't you... You know, I think you should be able to scratch it with your fingernails and be able to do things to make it go the other way. Then, I'm a big fan of it. It gets the game moving forward. It gives something back to the bowlers because, as we've seen, the swing bowlers are going out of the game unless you're in England. I mean, Stuart Broad and also Jimmy Anderson doing. You know, they're great swing bowlers, but you know, all of a sudden, if you can't work on the ball to get it shined conventionally, I cannot understand why you can't work it the other way to try and get it to go reverse. Yeah, no foreign objects, I get that, but I think it should be. I mean, you go to the MCG, it doesn't really swing at the MCG at all.
Yeah.
Adelaide swings maybe at night time.
Yeah.
The new ball swings for five overs and that's it, and then it's just gun barrel. So, you know, I think it's going to be difficult and you're going to see boring games. If bowlers can't take wickets and knock teams over, they're boring games to watch. Mm. Now, either one, they do something with the ball like that, as I've said, or they make the pitches more juicy, you know, put a bit more in, a bit more pace and bounce in them. Therefore, you know, it looks like more of an even contest.
I wonder if that will actually legitimately affect, like, Mitchell Stark's selection. Because I'm thinking the Australian bowlers, and it's like Cummins, Hazelwood, you know, Pattinson, you know, these guys are more into the deck bowlers, right? Excuse me.
Yep.
Whereas, like, you know, Stark might be used with a pink ball. It must be an absolute nightmare to face at bloody 9:30 at night on a Wednesday night, I'd imagine. But, like, you know, he's really Australia's only swing bowler, and really maybe, I mean, Ryan Harris swung it a little bit, I suppose, with a new ball, but Australia doesn't have a swing bowler in Australia for ages, and, like, we're just picking guys on fast decks, just getting into the wicket, just bouncing blokes out, really, and, like, Stark is sort of the attacking swing option, but if it's a Kookaburra and it's not swinging, then what's his role in the team, you know?
Well, yeah, look, that's a good point. I mean, the thing with Stark is that his strike rate is not as good last year as it was in the years gone by when the ball was reversing. There's no doubt about that.
Mm.
When the ball was reversing, he was cleaning up the tail. I mean, he was basically coming in and mopping it up at the end, taking fifer.
Yep.
So his strike rates are different because the ball's not reversing. And we saw that last year. When the ball wasn't reversing, he wasn't as effective. I think Hazelwood and Pat Cummins can swing, and Pattinson's a good swing bowler if the ball was swinging. But you're right. If the ball's not moving, you've got to all of a sudden look at other options. But I mean, I wouldn't be looking outside those options, those quick bowlers, and they're bowling 145, hitting the deck hard. So anyone that's got pace through the air, I think will be, you know, be pretty good. I mean, and Starkey, which I never thought he should take the new ball anyway, really. I mean, you know, Pat Cummins and Hazelwood should be taking the new ball all the time. But you're right. If the ball's not moving, all of a sudden bowlers aren't as effective. And Starkey was one when it wasn't moving for him.
Mm.
You know, all of a sudden people start to question, you know, should Pattinson be in the side? Should Hazelwood be playing? Mm. You know, those are the other options that come into it. So, if he's not swinging it, he's not as effective, put it that way.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys coming into the side or just eligibility altogether, like the news came and went without too much conjecture recently. BJ, Steve Smith completed his leadership ban, so he can captain again if they opt to go that way. But more than anything, it kind of highlighted that David Warner can't, like, in the cold light of day, like, away from the emotional swirl of sandpaper, like, does it go against the idea of forgiveness and penance and progress that a bloke is, you know, permanently banned from a leadership position?
Yeah, look, I think it's pretty harsh. I mean, I always thought the fans were very, very harsh as well. I mean, Michael Atherton got done for ball tampering, putting dirt on the ball of the Lord's Test match. I mean, Faf du Plessis's been done a couple of times. I mean, there's plenty of captains that have been done for ball tampering. But I think it was a stage where the administration from Cricket Australia were going against the players. They had the players dispute. And I reckon one of the factors was that we were having a political election in Australia. And I think when Malcolm Turnbull got on the phone to James Sutherland and said, what's going on? I think that was that was one area where politics, you know, just basically jumped in as well. And then all of a sudden you had this groundswell of saying, you know, a lynch mob, you know, let's get him. So look, I think it's been harsh for David Warner, no doubt. I don't think he should be banned from a captaining role, whether it be a BBL team or an Australian team or whatever. I think that was very, very harsh. Now, whether they would have made him captain in the future, then, you know, you don't have to make him captain. But I think banning someone for that, I think it's very harsh. I mean, I think he'd be a really good, you know, big bash captain. And at the end of the day, because they've banned him, I don't necessarily think he really wants to get out there and play big bash. I mean, he'll play for Australian test matches as much as he can, and one day internationals and T20s, but he's not going to be giving back like he would be. You know, I think if you dangled that carrot to him, because why would he want to continue to play big bash if he can't even captain the side and the money's not as good as he can get in another country? So I think that's a big loss for Cricket Australia. I think it's a big loss not getting, you know, him involved. Stephen Smith is a different person, you know. I mean, I think he will come back and captain the big bash team. I don't necessarily think he should be captaining Australia. I don't think he needs to. Mm. I mean, I'm happy with Tim Payne at the moment. I'm happy for Tim Payne to do it for another couple more years. I think we're at a stage of Australian cricket where there's not a lot there. You know, at the moment, I'm not seeing, you know, someone that can hold down that position above Tim Payne at this stage. So, you know, you've got to make sure that, you know, guys coming into that side earn their spot. And at the moment, you can lock in about two or three batsmen, and that's about it. You know, you're not going to get, you know, you have a look at, you know, the opener, you know, Joe Burns, he's not a lock in there. Matty Wade's not a lock in there as well. So, you know, Alex Carey, you know, whether he comes in or out, but he's certainly not a lock in. So, we haven't really sorted out our top six. It's been a worry for about 3 or 4 years, to be honest. It's got covered up by Smith and Warner. So, there's lots of sort of stuff that needs to be sorted out first before we start to look at a new captain, I reckon.
We're talking about, speaking of, you know, sort of player indiscretions, we saw just recently Jofra Archer, you know, breaking biosecurity measures just to pop off and go and see a friend. Yeah, and I wonder if Brendan Julian ever did that on a West Indian tour in 1995.
Certainly. I don't think I like to travel that far. You know, I'm quite lazy. Yeah. I mean, I'm quite happy for someone to come and see me. I don't think I'm sort of hopping in the car and driving
60 miles
a long way in between test matches and stuff like that. I mean, it's a home game for him, so that's one thing. That's one thing in England. When you're playing in England, I remember when we toured, 93, 97, 99, you used to get, four hire cars plus a bus. Yeah. So you always had to have four guys or four people to drive the hire cars. And they were really cool Peugeot hire cars that they gave us. So it gave you the opportunity to get out and about and drive in between games. So that was quite good. So they do it a lot in England anyway. But, it put them in a bit of a hard spot. And looking about selection, it might cost him his spot, you know. He might not play. I know he's a good bowler, but, Stuart Broad bowled pretty well. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I did ask you this 4 years ago, BJ, but it did come up again. I was watching that, is it the 99 ODI series in West Indies when there were pitch invasions and bottles being thrown? Was that 99 or 95?
Yeah.
99.
That was before the World Cup, before we went to England for 99 World Cup. Yeah.
That's right.
Man, yeah. That was Barbados.
That's right. I was watching that footage last night. I asked you again 4 years ago, but I'll just ask you again because it just looks terrifying. Like people running on the field, Steve Waugh's bats being taken away, people diving into the stumps, you know, Steve Waugh's walking off the field and the bottle gets thrown at him and almost gets hit in the head. Like, I mean, you're laughing at it, so obviously it wasn't that scary at all. I mean, like,
I wasn't laughing.
Yeah, sorry.
Mate, I wasn't laughing when Steve Waugh made us, well, he didn't make us, he basically told us, look, we've got to go back out there because Sir Garfield Sobers came in, and I probably said this, came in the change room and said, look, you're going to have to go back out and continue the game, and Sherman Campbell's going to have to bat, because if you don't do that, you're not going to get out of the change room alive. So we're like, oh, all right, come on, let's go back out. And then I'm walking out, and then Steve Waugh said to me, mate, BJ, you're down at fine leg. I went, mate, there's no way in the world I'm going down at fine leg. Man, they're going to lynch me down there, you know. So I just said, mate, I'm staying in the ring. There's no way in hell I'm going down the boundary at all. So
yeah.
It was more about just sort of staying in the ring.
Yeah.
And we weren't even worried about the game. We ended up losing the game, I think. And it was more about just sort of getting out of the ground. I mean, the ground, they were just going berserk. Yeah. It was just like booing and, as you saw, throwing stuff. And it made it a very, I think, I can't remember which one day international. It might have been the first one, but I remember even going to Guyana for another one. And they stormed the ground there again.
Mm.
And they just, you know, if it was a win to the West Indies, everyone just jumped the rope and just sprinted out the ground and grabbing hats and shirts and stumps. And, man, it was just a free-for-all. Bloody nightmare.
Good times.
Just picking up on that Garfield Sobers chat, it was in relation to Sherwin Campbell being run out sort of unfairly or something. It was acrimonious.
Yeah, BJ was bowling.
Yeah. That's right. Like when
I did shirt front him. It did look bad on TV. I mean, I came down, I bowled a delivery. He was running past. I went out to get the ball because he knocked it just in front of me. I stopped. He hit me. And then Bevo came in and took a stump and ran out Sherwin Campbell. Campbell was lying on the ground. But I must admit, I didn't think much of it. I mean, I wasn't getting out of the road, put it that way. I sort of, and they had a bit of a wingspan there as well. My left arm sort of caught him on the shoulder. So
great wingspan.
It's a great rig.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, gee, he went down though, far out. Man, he milked that. He would have got a free kick anyway.
He went to the soft leg. Yeah.
I'm just thinking when you know, Sir Garfield Sobers is in the Australian dressing room. This is a 99 Australian dressing room as well. Like, and he says, listen, you're going to have to let Campbell bat again. Like, does anyone argue back to him in that situation? Mm. So, well, no, Gary.
No, I reckon Warney might have. I reckon Warney's like, mate, I'm not going back up there. What? Don't worry about it. Let's just go. Come on, let's go to the hotel. Well, I've got something organised. Let's get in the bar. And I think Sobers might have said, mate, I don't actually think you're going to get out of the ground. But no one argued with him. That was his, mate, that was his town. Yeah. That was Barbados. It was like he was the king. So even more the king than Warney.
Because people were chanting, we want Campbell, we want Campbell. Like, you have to look at the footage if you listen to this. It's insane. And as I said, bottles being thrown, and then the Australian team starts walking off. Some of the guys are running into the dressing room, and Steve Waugh is like walking off in his little hustle off
the
field.
A little waddle
off the field. And then someone throws a bottle, nearly hits him, really close, hit him in the head. He just double teapots and just stares down the crowd. It's like, Steve.
But the thing with it, right, is that bottle came from the members. I mean, where the change room was the members' stand. It'd be like walking into the ladies' stand at the SCG or the members' stand at the MCG. You don't expect a member, you know, and it's all people in suits and corporates at that area. I mean, the jungle was at the other end, down my end, you know, right at the other end of the ground.
Yeah.
That's when it was like free-for-all there. But you don't expect someone throwing from the members a bottle at you. So that's why I think it caught a lot of us by surprise, because we'd been copying it at the other end of the ground, and then you're walking into the change room and someone does that.
Yeah.
That's when we thought, this is getting a little bit out of control.
Get out of here, yeah.
Brendan, thanks so much for the chat, mate. Great to have you back on episode, 100-plus episodes in. And, you know, thanks for the advice you gave us and the experience of episode number 4. And I hope we've come a long way since then. And hopefully catch you in one of the bubbles this summer.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, boys. Great to chat to you. Do you reckon you'll be around for episode 400?
Is that when you're booking yourself in another 400?
Yeah, I'll book myself in for F 400.
Okay. I don't reckon we'll have Mark Waugh by then either.
Mate, I tell you what, I'm going to work on him all summer, and it will be my job to get him on here.
Awesome.
This was a long conversation to get Alan Border's phone number.
I don't think he's got a mobile. Mate, but he's still got the landline.
Landline, that's good.
I saw him do an interview the other day, and he was in a hoodie at home, and it just felt really incongruous seeing, you know, the grandfather of my cricket kind of upbringing in a hoodie. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I had to send something to AB, email him something, and he goes, oh, mate, my internet's not working. He's still got dial-up. He's got that dial-up thing.
Oh, my God.
I said, buddy, you got to upgrade. He goes, no, the dial-up's working, because he lives on a sort of a semi-farm up there. Mate, it's ridiculous.
Brendan Julian, thanks very much.
See you, boys.
One of the worst things I have ever seen done on a cricket field. Good night.
Pezza, Budgie Smuggler, they've come through again with the goods. They're always supporting us in some capacity, if not in the trouser trunk wear department, with the facial department as well, bottom half of the face stuff.
Yeah, they've got stuff for every part of your body these days.
How's your mask game, by the way?
Pretty good, though I must confess, this morning I forgot to bring my mask with my my work permit to come to this studio.
Yep.
And so I did, for the 1 minute walk to your to this studio, I did put a yellow fluorescent vest over my face.
I was a bit concerned when you turn up. I thought it might have been like Galatasaray away. Nice. Turn up with a flare.
Yeah, well, that could be the first thing that you get as a custom design Budgie Smuggler masks.
Nice.
I'm just trying to think about people who are a bit on the nose this week. If you're trying to think of designs for your Budgie Smuggler masks.
Got to cover your nose as well.
Yeah, that's right. And people who are on the nose to cover your nose.
Yep.
If you want a custom design, I'm thinking people who are on the nose this week. Ellen.
Yep.
You get Ellen DeGeneres on that face.
Yep.
On that mask.
Yeah. Sam Newman's always in the news.
Yeah, TikTok's in the news.
TikTok.
What's CCP? Up with TikTok? Yeah, the CCP.
Yeah.
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
If you want to turn heads, these are the fucking people that you go to.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to spitball a few ideas here. You might have completely different ideas. You might have your season goals or your My Cricket page.
Season goals would be really funny to go to training because people are going to have to train in face marks. They have to turn them in face marks, sure, at the moment, especially in Victoria.
What is it, 800 runs, 35 wickets?
Something completely unrealistic.
Yeah. You've never achieved that in any year. Never touched it.
How are you going to do it this year?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to change anything about the way I prepare for cricket.
Just write
I'm going to be a year older. I'm going to drink more.
Yep.
And I'm going to have exactly the same goals, if not higher, because it sounds good and feels good to say because you never get anything wrong in preseason.
Do you ever think, like, when you're scoring the runs – like the year before, you're just like, oh, I was unlucky there, but I was unlucky 15 times through a year. And just like, oh, I can, there's something in me I can do this. And that, you know what? That's probably true. That's probably true with heaps of cricket. You're playing like higher grades, grade cricket. You're a good player. Like you are good at the sport. And there's, for heaps of people, they're like, if I just put more energy into this, I probably could be really good.
Yeah.
But then like, so then that's the bit that fucks you a little bit, I think, in grade cricket, where it's just in your brain. And so, but if you write it down, you put it on a face mask, for instance, Budgie Smuggler,
what would your goals be?
My goals this
year?
Yeah. I played a season in the UK and
here we go.
And the first – I went there 3 years and a club in Surrey. And the first year I scored about almost 800 runs, I think.
765 runs, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
42.
And then at the end of season piss up, someone said to me, you can come back next year and you can score 1,000 runs. And I didn't do that. But I
come back or score a thousand
I
runs?
Came back. Oh. I came back. Well, let me tell you, I took that money. Yeah. I took those flights and accommodation, let me tell you, and I cashed in.
Pound a run? Dollar a run?
No, I can't remember what the deal was, but it wasn't that. But yeah, it was just someone had said a number that I liked and I was just like, okay, I'll do that.
Mm.
What I didn't try any harder. I probably tried a little bit less, if anything.
I was due to go to the UK in 2005.
Sorry, I thought we were going to do the Budgie Smuggler thing then.
I was due to go in 05, playing some good cricket.
Yeah.
And then I met a girlfriend and she became a wife. We have a child.
Yeah, okay.
Second one imminent.
Yeah, so you still think about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. What could have been? You could have scored 1,000 runs.
Mm.
You could have made £1,000 through runs.
Mm. It reminds me of the poem, Two Roads Diverged in a Wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that's made all the difference. And that would be on my smuggler mask, budgiesmuggleruk.com.
Pezzy Lad, hashtag AskTGC. Here we go. Ben Moss wrote in last week and we didn't get time to do it. Matthew Hayden was telling us too many stories about Stradbroke Island. But he writes in.
Yep.
Ask TJC, here's a story about my comeback to cricket after a long injury layoff. A bit of backstory, I came over to England last year to play cricket like every young Australian cricketer dreams of, maybe, and upon a recommendation from a mate, ended up at a club in North Yorkshire.
Romantic.
The club I ended up at was a proper village club. In a proper village league, thanks, mate, and having played a decent standard back home, it came as a bit of a shock to me. The 11th player is often found on the morning of game day and is usually somebody's sister or even once the 83-year-old club president. Anyway, I enjoyed my time making the most runs in the league and also taking 35 wickets at 12 with my very, very part-time left-arm spin.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. Though most shocking to me was the fact that I ended up falling in love with the captain's sister. So I have a newfound... So I've now found myself back at the club this year, having just managed to get back into the country before the world completely shut down. My Australian season was cut short with a back injury. I only managed about 5 games for the year, so I wasn't planning to play at all in this village league this year.
So I can clarify there, Higos. Yeah. So he's done really well at a village league.
That's right.
35 wickets at 12, big most fish. Runs, falls in love with the captain's sister. goes back to Australia to play his season, plays five games.
That's right.
But he returns to the UK for love with no intention of playing cricket.
No intention.
Okay.
No intention. The story goes on. To my horror, but unsurprisingly, the club was struggling to find an 11th player for this week's game. So I said I would have a limited run around. So I stood in the field for 45 overs to watch our team drop 9 catches and get hit for about 100 off the last 10 overs of the innings, all while not being able to move too well as my back is still bad at the age of 23. Huh. Oh, brother. My turn to bat came and I was excited about having a hit. I walked out and first ball I pulled to fine leg for a single, then looked down at my overpriced bat to see a big crack had developed across the splice. I decided to change my bat at the end of the over and the kid at the other end should face it out. He didn't, and I had to face one ball, which cannoned into my thigh pad and was caught by the keeper. They all appealed madly, and the 75-year-old umpire with no teeth stood still for 15 seconds before slowly putting his finger up. To make things even better, when I got off, I was told by the scorers that it was in fact the 7th ball of the over. Mm-hmm. So my return lasted 2 balls, one of which broke my bat and the other caught behind off the thigh pad on the 7th ball of the over. Mm-hmm. My question is, do I go around again next week as I said I would, or do I give in to the fact that my dodgy back isn't going to allow me to play play past the age of 30 anyway, so I may as well just give up now? Sorry the question so long, but yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
I like it. Thoughts, Pez?
My thoughts are like he's got to be full on or not on with whatever he decides to do, whatever Ben decides to do.
Yeah, okay.
He can't have this, I'm going to fill in last minute. Yeah, I scored the most runs last year. I'll just have a run around, play as a stick. I've got a bag back.
Yeah.
He's either got to completely give up and say, no, I'm here for love only. I scored the most runs last year. I will remain a legend of the club. That's my legacy. I refuse to play. At which point your stock grows because it's the mystery. Or it's like you know, what happens at Upstairs Cargo? No one knows because you don't get in, right?
I do.
Yeah, well, I knew you would say that. Thanks for that. You needed to say that just for the narrative.
Yep.
That's one way of looking at it.
What happens at Upstairs Cargo,
The other way is to push through that fucking pain, whatever L5-S1 herniated disc issue you have.
Yeah.
And
you've got some back stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And ensure that legacy is developed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go back and you be that fucking best run scorer. You take the most wickets. You are the man. You get the pride of your girlfriend, who is the captain's sister.
Yeah.
There's no middle ground.
Or runs for love.
You score runs for love. You get in that local paper in North Yorkshire. I'm just imagining the show Heartbeat now. You got green grass up on the side. Watching. That's a fucking old reference, I have to say.
One for the kids.
My parents were together. So, yeah. But don't do middle ground stuff, Ben. Middle ground stuff.
I love the idea of just like I got a friend who he's got really bad knees. He's just a great athlete, just loves his sport. He's like good, one of those guys good at everything.
Yeah.
Good at cricket, good at football, good at rugby. Yeah.
It's hard.
I'm talking about you.
Yeah.
And I'm not. And just a guy who like just shoot, his body's screaming at him, please do not play any more sport. I hate you for doing this to me.
My body is a machine. It's separate from your mind. I can't do it.
It's Saturday afternoon. He's down to the footy again and he's got his boots in the car just in case.
Mm.
If he didn't want to play, those boots ain't in that car, you know? So he's going to play.
Spirit is willing, flesh is weak.
Okay.
It's like what's more important, what your body that you can physically see and feel is communicating to you or what these intangible notions of identity are saying to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, but this is my esteem.
Hitting some good numbers here. Legacy, love, identity, esteem.
That's what cricket is. It's not a game.
It's not a fucking game,
it's an expression.
Mate.
It's a sociological experiment.
They're not rules. They're laws. It's so fucking up itself, this game.
Sam Mitchell writes in, the former Hawthorn player. No.
Okay.
Dad's Story is the title. Dear Ask TGC, context, I'm writing this whilst sulking on the boundary, mulling over my dismissal.
Mm.
It's my first competitive league game of the season in sunny South Wales, UK. Crisp new grey Knicks stash packed neatly in my kit bag. Sister is watching as she's recently taken an interest in cricket over lockdown. Not sure why. I'm opening the batting and get castled fourth ball of the innings. After a reluctant trudge off the field and an exaggerated hand gesture indicating prolific away swing to the incoming batsman, lovely, I grab my phone from the kit bag. Upon opening my WhatsApp feed to my family's group chat, my dad has asked, is Sam fielding or batting first? My sister, being very compassionate and receptive to my embarrassment, replies, his team are batting first. So emphasis on team, the italics are in team there. Mm-hmm. Julie underscores either side, that's how you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Dad's reply, is he batting right now? My sister confers with me to get permission to break the news to Dad of my pathetic failure. Out of pure curiosity, I allow her to reveal to him the truth. As my sister's message was double blue ticked, I wondered to myself, will Dad still make an appearance to witness my wicket-keeping performance for 45 overs? Finally, Dad responds with, "Think I'll take a rain check. Loads to do in the garden. See you later?" Question mark. I reply with, "Cheers," all lowercase. My question is, shall I give up cricket to pursue a sport that will make Dad more proud and interested, or do I continue to waste my Saturdays playing this game that will ultimately never satisfy my desire for Dad's approval? Great to have you guys back. Yours sincerely, Sam.
I played.
Start talking about how many runs you scored. I played back in 05. 730 at.
Just cover drives is there for me. I played football back in school, as in soccer. And one of my best friends was the goalkeeper, and then his parents just like stopped turning up because he was the goalkeeper and they had much to do. We had quite a good team, so he wasn't like making heaps of saves or whatever. And they were just like, "I'm not driving across the other side of Sydney to watch you stand in a goal in the under 11s or whatever." And just quite funny because like just like his wicket keeping performance, where he's literally involved in the game every single ball for 45 overs, but it's not. But then I started to think about the origins of what the wicketkeeper is, because it's actually a time saver. I'm not talking about in the early 1900s. I'm talking about the very first games of cricket when they realised like, oh, the batsman often misses it or whatever.
It's probably a backstop.
It's a backstop, yeah. So you're literally there as a time saver. Mm. That's the origins of the wicketkeeping job. I became a wicketkeeper in my teens because I was like, no, I want to touch the ball more. It was a boredom-based selection.
Right.
It was a boredom-based choice of position for me. Anyway, and then just like thinking about cricket in the UK and like how they're much more connected to the community, the clubs are way more connected to the community. It'd be the same as any major metropolis like London or Sydney or Melbourne or whatever. If you live in the city or like closer to the city, those clubs aren't connected to the community anyway.
Cost of living's high. You've got to make that money.
Every
to pay
dog
your
for
rent.
Himself, bro. Yeah. Like everyone's looking out for top dog. Everyone's looking out for number one. Whereas like
every dog for himself, bro.
Budgie smuggly UK dog. But I really love that idea that even though in like this place where his sisters come to watch and his dad might come to watch, there's always just something else to do in the garden. He ain't watching the cricket.
I got a different take, I got to say. Like, I mean, everything.
Well, you'd be wrong.
Great. I'll say it anyway. Like, everything about this letter screams of highly functional, together, loving family. I mean, firstly, Sam is signing off, you know, love having you guys back. I mean, we haven't had Ernest Praise in years.
Yeah, it's a nice message. I'm not saying it's not a nice message.
No, but this is my point. Like, exclamation mark, yours sincerely, Sam. Like, really lovely stuff. He's got a sister that's become interested in cricket and comes down to watch him before the game starts. Yeah. She's there to watch him get castled fourth ball. And not only that, she has the wherewithal, the knowledge, the compassion to check with him, to confer with him in a bid to get Dad to the ground. Yeah. That's high empathy skills.
Well, she's in a relationship with someone else in the team.
Possibly. I hadn't thought about it that way. That's a dark read, but possibly that's possibly true.
Yeah.
Dad writes back to the WhatsApp and he doesn't absolutely alpha his son. He just says, "Look, I've got loads to do in the garden." And he's just trying to let him off lightly.
Yeah.
I think Sam, who's literally getting a reply from his dad, should be fucking grateful for that to start with. You're grateful he's got one family member there who doesn't want to fucking give it to him when he gets cast with fourth ball, which is embarrassing. I think Sam's being ungrateful. I think Sam's a bit entitled, with respect to Sam and his lovely family and his well-written letter. And to think his dad's going to come along and watch him fucking keep wicket, and he's like, "Oh, should I give up?" Like, your dad wrote back to you, brother.
Yeah, you
be
should
be grateful.
Give up.
Living there in Wales, your sister's coming along. Get out of my fucking ass, TGCs. Get out of here. Jesus. Come over to Australia, have a crack at that.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Greg McLeod. Hi, guys.
Sorry, Sam.
I write to you with a question about the existential nature of the alpha.
Okay.
My local Sunday Fredley Village cricket team has recently acquired a new player by virtue of him recently moving to the area. Our current side is made up of enthusiastic young lads with little or no formal coaching and middle-aged men with more injuries than hair follicles. As you can expect, our priority is to have a good time and get to the pub as quickly as possible to discuss this week's excuses for not making it into double figures. Our new player is a gun bat, good rig, hits a long ball, shapes up well, and is currently playing in the Nottinghamshire Premier League. A quick look on Play Cricket shows his averages in the mid-50s. Decent. And though we all agree he's our best player, we obviously hate him. Clearly, he should be the alpha, but is he? We'd like nothing more than to bring people down a peg or two, especially those that mentioned they play in the Prem. Play in the Prem. Mm. Every other sentence, clearly trying to assert his dominance over us. Our enjoyment now comes from witnessing his failures. In his first game for us, after declaring the cars were too close and might get damaged by his mighty six hitting, he got a golden duck. He laughed it off, but we knew he was crying inside. I don't know why I laughed at that. We knew he was crying inside. Yeah,
there's a wailing child inside his body as he walks off.
Nothing could have pleased us more. So now, as we watch from the sidelines, we shout abuse at any and every shot that isn't technically perfect. Is that how you do it in the Prem? So my question is, can you be the alpha when you're clearly better than the rest of the team, but your team constantly rips the piss and relishes your downfall? Or are we all being classic cucks and doing our best to massage our own egos in the shadow of a clearly more dominant player? P.S. My girlfriend wrote into you last year about us meeting AB de Villiers and me saying she could sleep with him if he gave me batting tips. I remember that one quite well. We decided not to ask him if he was up for that.
P.S.
We decided not to ask him if he was up for that. And to this day, I believe that is why I'm still averaging under 8. Thanks, Greg.
P.S. What about that time I sexually propositioned AB de Villiers? I just want to let you know what happened there.
You up for it? AB?
You have sex with my partner and tell me how to bat.
It's actually quite lucky because the saying does go like once you go AB de V, you never go back.
Okay.
So it's good for the relationship that they've stayed together.
Okay. Look, this is an interesting question here, guys.
Once you have AB de V.
Yeah. Keep having a go at it?
It's my thing now.
Yeah, it's good. That's good.
Sorry.
So it's an interesting question from Greg because I think this is a uniquely UK situation, so I'm kind of loath to pass too much cultural comment on it. I mean, from like the I know you spend some time there, like nobody can like hate others better than English people.
Yeah, it's a sport in itself.
Opposition teams losing or teams that you hate losing feels better than your own team winning often. And I think this might extrapolate to players as well.
Yeah.
So he notes this player, gun bat, good rig, hits a long ball, shapes up well, play averages 50 in the Nottingham Premier League.
Yep.
So in Australia, that's cut and dry at alpha.
Yeah.
You can't not be an alpha in that situation. It's very difficult because you're not going to get, like, by virtue of the physical appearance, guys aren't going to go, we're going to try and pull this guy down a peg or two. It's more of a schoolyard thing. Like, you pick on the people that you think look weak. Oh, he's got a weird body. Why does his hair look like that?
Why does his hair look like that?
I'm just trying to think of things. Like, something that looks weird is like they're going to be attacked. Whereas
if we're at training and you turn to me, someone walks past us and you turn to me and he goes, why does his hair look like that?
I don't know. I was never the alpha. You know, I'm not.
I take your point, though. If we're down at training and there's a guy in the first, and he's made first grade, he's averaging 50. He's the big dog at training.
And you're not questioning it. You're going, how can we rip this guy down? No. You're like, look at his rig. Look at his long
ball.
I'm asking
for gloves.
Look at the levers. Look at the average. Yeah. It's the whole thing's a package.
What's his penis look like?
What's his penis look like? It's probably good. He's got a good rig. You know?
Is his sister coming to watch?
What's the outline of his penis in his training gear? Can you see it?
Fuck me. What's the outline?
I laugh too much. So in Australia, it's a done deal. He's the alpha. You don't pull them down a peg unless they do something to create that. Whereas in the UK, clearly you're looking to pull people down regardless.
Yeah.
So it's a much more complex interplay around who the alpha is.
Yeah.
I think both things can be true. I think these guys can be beta cucks massaging their own ego and that this guy isn't the alpha, because if people don't treat you as the alpha, then you're not the alpha. Perception's everything.
But also, like, when Greg wrote this question, it was like, the guy averages mid-50s in the Premier League. Decent.
Yeah.
Fucking all right, Bradman. That's so good.
Is Greg – I mean, this is the question. In Greg's mind and with his cohort of players in the culture of English cricket at this level where you're shit, you look shit, and everything is shit, is anyone alpha? Are you going to permit anybody to be alpha? And if so, what are the conditions?
Yeah,
I'd love to hear from people in those categories. What does it take to be alpha when you're very shit yourself and you want to pull everyone down? Yeah. I'd love to know that.
If you played, first grade, Pez, you're a good player, good little player.
I disagree.
If you played fifth grade now and you averaged 50, you'd bite my hand off for that, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah.
50 in any level is good.
Yeah.
Any level.
When he makes a mistake, he's like, oh, would you do that in the prayer?
Yeah. I like the idea that they're calling out whilst he's batting.
Mm. Yeah. Unless he plays a perfect shot, they yell out, is that how you do it in the prem? Unless it's off the middle of the bat. Great.
I love it, mate. Mate, thanks for doing the show with me.
Yeah, likewise.
Rob Key was good. Yeah. Brendan Julian, always good.
Yeah.
See you guys next week. And thanks for tuning in as ever. See you next week.